only price at which you can be confident of getting the proper return on investment. You are putting in almost $28,000 of your own money, plus the liability of an additional $30,000 loan, to achieve a net profit of $33,750. If anything goes wrong and any of your costs go up, that profit margin can be reduced quickly. Since you are a disciplined real estate investor who knows your numbers, the purchase price will be $57,950, or it won't be a deal.
The buy and hold worksheet in action.
Let's look at the same $125,000 property using the buy and hold terms worksheet, which is figure 93 on the bonus CD. As with the buy and sell case, the purchase terms are described at the top of the worksheet, with sub-worksheets below to get the primary numbers. Since you're following the Millionaire Real Estate Investor's guidance, you'll need to get a 20% discount of $25,000 on the property, and so will offer to buy it for $100,000. You have $28,000 to invest, so you'll be able to put 20% down, or $20,000, and finance 80%, or $80,000. As in the buy-and-sell model, your cost of purchase is $925, and your cost of a repair is $7,095. Since you will be holding the property and renting it, you will not be dealing with either closing costs for resale or carrying costs for the holding period. You will have ongoing carrying costs, but they will be paid from the rental income. The NOI, Net Operating Income, sub-worksheet, is the place where your analysis of the investment must be sharp. A quick glance reveals that the three biggest expenses are property taxes, insurance, and vacancy. The first is impossible to avoid or control. Tax rates vary greatly from municipality to municipality. Ask your local tax assessor's office or your real estate agent for the local taxation rates. Insurance also fluctuates greatly depending on the type and location of a property. When you call to get quotes, remember to indicate that the property will be an investment property, since that will affect the rates. These costs should be factored into the rent you charge. Vacancy is something you can manage by making both the property and the rent attractive to renters. We'll discuss this, along with maximizing your rents, in the next chapter, Own a Million. For now, you need to realize that these three expenses can cost as much as 40% of your gross rental income. You need to be aware of them and manage what you can control to maximize your NOI. Your NOI is really what dictates the kind of financing you can afford to select. In our example, the 30-year mortgage loan is the only one that actually will generate cash flow. Even then, this sample property will net the investor only $7.79 a month, or less than $100 a year. These numbers are sobering indeed, and they illustrate how difficult it can be to find the kinds of great deals that generate cash flow of $200, $300, or even $500 a month. Rent, as we'll explain in Own a Million, is your most powerful lever in this equation. If you rented this property for just 0.02% of the market price more, the frequently talked about but not easily achieved 1% rule, you'd net $242.79 a month and $2,913.52 a year the very first year. We have looked at this real estate investment using each of the two terms worksheets with real numbers. If you want to buy, improve, and sell, you can pay about $58,000. If you want to buy, improve, and hold, you can pay about $100,000. This is assuming that all your numbers are correct. If any of the numbers change, so does your offer or your return. In the beginning, it will take time and discipline to complete this analysis for each investment opportunity you investigate. Until you know how much it costs to get carpets installed, you have to call vendors and get quotes. Until you know market rents, you have to research them. But with some practice and experience, more and more of these numbers will be readily available to you. Either you already have the numbers or you know someone who can supply them quickly. This is how two millionaire real estate investors we know were able to estimate the total repairs on a property they purchased within 5% of the final costs, with nothing more than a notepad and a 10-minute walkthrough. Over time, the process will get easier, but it never should be dropped. It will always inform and protect you.
Buy a million. You have the power.
If knowledge is power, you now have more power. You should feel ready, willing, and more able than ever before to make real estate investments, to take your financial wealth building to the next level. All that remains is to get into action. Informed, purposeful action. There are two very practical steps to take. First, to understand value. And second, to get perspective before you explore your acquisition strategies. By that we mean you must study your target marketplace, know the prices for properties that meet your criteria, and know the trends of those prices. Is the market appreciating? At what rate? What makes you think it will continue to appreciate? What are the economic and demographic forces driving the prices both in the area and in specific neighborhoods? In addition, you will need to study rental rates. What are the expected rental rates for the properties that meet your criteria? Are they going up, going down, or staying flat? What has been the trend over time, and what is predicted? What are renters looking for that might allow for higher rental rates? As you look at more and more properties, check what they are selling for and learn what rental rates they are getting. You will build confidence as an investor. You'll be able to calculate the numbers you put in your terms worksheet accurately. This will empower you to identify the best investment opportunities, make intelligent offers, and buy it right when you acquire a property. You'll eventually become a value expert for your type of investment properties in your targeted areas. The second step is to get perspective on where you are on your path as an investor. You'll have three choices for your primary short-term strategy. They are buy and live, buy and sell, and buy and hold. If you are just beginning and have little or no capital to invest, your best bet is buy and live. This means you'll treat your own residence as an investment. You will buy it like an investment, with the added advantage of being able to get the kinds of financing and minimum down payments available to owner-occupant buyers. You can add your own sweat equity while you're living in the house, and so increase its value. In the future, you can move on to another residence, also purchased using an investor mindset, and sell the first one for a profit, or hold it for equity buildup and cash flow. Many investors have used this financially sound strategy of buying, living, moving, and holding. If you currently have your own residence, want to invest in more real estate, but don't have money to invest, the buy and sell strategy is a great way to build up your investment capital. By acquiring properties under market value, fixing them up if they need it, and quickly reselling them, you can make a net profit. While you usually will have to pay taxes on that profit, you can use the remaining money to make your next investment. As you do more of these deals, you can increase the amount of money you have available for investing. There are millionaire real estate investors who have used some of this cash flow for their living expenses. In this case, they are buying and selling real estate as both a job and a way to earn cash for future investing. Eventually, though, they will be investing the greater proportion of the cash they receive. In the end, all roads lead to buy and hold. This is where true financial wealth is built. When you have the money from your savings or your net cash proceeds, you'll look to acquire properties that you can rent and hold for the long term, which maximizes your equity buildup and cash flow growth. No matter where you are on the path, pick the best strategy and then follow the models of the millionaire real estate investor. Stick to your criteria. Be systematic in your lead generation. Use the worksheets. Insist on getting your terms. Engage your network. And be a shopper, not a buyer. In fact, shop till you drop. Your financial net worth will rise, perhaps to a level you never imagined.
Points to remember. Proven models allow you to learn from the mistakes of others as well as build on their successes. The five key models in real estate investing are the net worth model, the financial model, the network model, the lead generation model, and last, the acquisition model. The net worth model. Learn the path of money. Money has a path, and you must guide it to the places that will yield the greatest financial growth and most substantial net worth. Budget for investments. Stay on the path, differentiating between what you want and what you need. Make a personal budget and hone the discipline to stick to it. Track personal net worth. Keep a household P&L and balance sheet to track net worth over time. Examine your total often and ask yourself, how can I make it grow? The financial model. There are two ways to build wealth by investing in real estate. Equity buildup and cash flow growth. Equity buildup increases your net worth in your real estate assets and comes from the twin forces of price appreciation and debt paydown. Cash flow growth provides a stream of unearned income, which is possible when you buy it right, finance wisely, and control your expenses. Adopt the motto, buy right, pay it down, pay it off. Buy it right is when you make your money going in, assuring yourself the best of equity buildup and cash flow growth. Pay it down, so you'll add significantly to your equity buildup. Pay it off, and you'll ensure a growing stream of unearned income, where your money starts to work for you. The network model. Your work network is your investing lifeline. Build it by bringing together a powerful group of people, a dream team, who can play the right roles at the right times so you can achieve your financial dreams. There are three circles in your work network. The inner circle is the select group you trust the most. They are your mentors, consultants, partners, your informal board of directors. The support circle includes the key fiduciary people in your real estate investment life. They are the professionals you rely on to advise you on both the details of specific transactions and the people you will need to complete them. The service circle features the specialized independent contractors and freelancers who perform specific functions for a particular property or transaction. Work your work network. Build it, maintain it, and engage it. The lead generation model. To find great investment properties, you need leads. Lots of them. The lead generation model informs your property search and powers it, and it's one of the main ways you can take luck out of the investment game. The lead generation model is built around four core questions. They are, what am I looking for? Here you establish your criteria, which consist of location, type, economic, condition, construction, features and amenities. Then devise an all points bulletin, an APB, describing the real estate investment for which you'll be prospecting and marketing. Who can help me find it? This is where you identify the people who can connect you to properties that meet your criteria. They include owners, intermediaries, and your leads network. How will I find the property or the people connected to it? The answer is to systematically prospect and market for real estate investment opportunities. Which properties are the real opportunities? Now is the time to separate the suspects from the prospects. Build your investing posture on the five laws of lead generation. First, never compromise. Second, be a shopper, not a buyer. Third, timing matters. Fourth, it's a numbers game. The fifth, be organized and systematic. The acquisition model. By following the acquisition model and buying right, you virtually guarantee the success of your investments. The key? Make your money going in. There are two fundamental acquisition strategies, buy for cash or buy for cash flow and equity buildup. With buy for cash, you use one of the four cash building strategies, find and refer, control and assign, buy and sell, or buy, improve, and sell. When you buy for cash flow and equity, you explore three options for building and attaining both, the lease option, the buy and hold, or the buy, improve, and hold. Of all these strategies, the two that stand above the others are buy and sell and buy and hold. With the buy and sell strategy, you're looking for one thing, cash. You want to ensure a fast net profit payoff by quickly buying and selling. But you must know your numbers going in, so work them carefully with a buy and sell terms worksheet. With a buy and hold strategy, you employ the true financial wealth-building option, a long-term strategy employing the twin forces of equity buildup and cash flow growth. It's still a numbers game, but over the longer term. So vigilantly employ the buy-and-hold term worksheet as your guide. Own a Million. The Labyrinth at Chartres.
Sometimes life feels amazing, and sometimes it just feels like a maze, filled with dead ends, double back loops, and places that look alike but aren't. Real estate investing can present a similar set of challenges, and so the symbol of the Labyrinth at Chartres may be an appropriate place to begin our Own a Million discussion. That famous walk-through maze is located on the sanctuary floor of the Chartres Cathedral in France, built in 1235 AD. It was created so that parishioners could walk the maze as a substitute for making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem. In some cases, they had to shuffle along on their knees as a penance. The key to making it through the maze is to stay focused and to stay on the path. You see, in the Chartres maze, there are no wrong turns, just a long, winding path to the center. Sometimes the path takes you away from the center, but if you carefully watch where you're going and stay on the marked path, you'll make it to the end. The curious thing about these types of mazes is that they always look more complicated than they really are. That's what I want to talk about here. I want to take the complexity out of the maze of investing in and owning investment properties. The fact is that anything taken to its most sophisticated level usually becomes complex. Even the cars we drive, the TVs we watch, and the computers we use are at some level very complicated. However, using them to our advantage can be as simple as turning the key in the ignition, operating a remote, and pointing and clicking with a mouse. The question to ask about anything we do is this: how much of the complexity must I know in order to get what I want from it? Based on what we've already covered, you now understand how to acquire real estate investment properties and know how to buy a million, that is, acquire $1 million in property market value. What's different about looking at how to own a million or amass $1 million of equity? The real difference is a shift in your focus from trying to buy it right to now attempting to grow it right. It's about turning acquired market value into realized equity gain. It's about turning your real estate investments into actual net worth that shows up on the balance sheet. From the very beginning of this book, this is the game you set out to play. It's the real estate investing wealth-building game. But let me be clear about one thing. You already have covered everything you need to know to become a net worth millionaire real estate investor with $1 million in equity in your investments. It's all in the financial model, the lead generation model, and the acquisition model. If you follow those models, you won't go wrong and inevitably will become an own-a-million real estate investor. Here you'll be shifting your focus to a buy-and-hold investment strategy. While you can always do a buy-and-sell if the opportunity is right and you want to generate some cash, it's buy-and-hold that brings real financial wealth. The buy-and-hold strategy is all about maximizing and accelerating equity buildup and cash flow growth. A word of caution before we continue. Up to this point, we have kept things simple and straightforward. Now we're going to cross that line. It's unavoidable. Everyone who pursues financial wealth building will, over time, be forced to deal with these nuances of the game. Just remember that as complex as it may first appear, if you stick with it and stay on the path, it'll become increasingly uncomplicated for you. And knowing how to deal with them can make a positive difference in your investing life. Veteran investors love this part of the real estate game. They love to be creative and enthusiastically dive into the complexity like little kids in a mud puddle. They can spend hours debating cash flow versus equity. They can sit on the porch and spit and whittle about rents, repairs, and property management. They can go on and on about 1031s, tax loopholes, and the calculation of returns on investment. Lease options, non-equal lending, and owner financing are, to them, the frosting on the cake. They love to tell the stories and share the details of their deals, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And they love to use insider language and shortcut phrases that no one except a few people even remotely understands to describe their favorite deals and transactions. As you become one of those investors, getting into the creativity of real estate investing may not be necessary, but it is likely. In time, you too will come to understand the maze of creative options available to you and become fascinated by the variations of this amazing game. However, when it comes to reaching your long-term goals, this world of creativity and complexity can be as dangerous as it is compelling. Many of our millionaire real estate investors warned us about these dangers. They told stories of how they got bored with the things they were doing that were working for them and began to get creative in their real estate investments. They told us what went wrong, how their financial wealth building got sidetracked or went off track. Looking back, they would say, "I wish I had stayed with what was working. I wish I'd bought more of those basic good deals and not sold the good ones I had."
The 17 issues of Own a Million.
With that wisdom in hand, let's focus on the 17 issues you're likely to encounter in the Own a Million stage of your financial wealth building journey. They fall into five principal areas: criteria, terms, network, money, and you.
Criteria, always the guiding light.
As tight as your criteria are now, they are not as tight as they're going to be. As you continue to acquire more real estate, you'll become even more certain about your criteria for both considering an opportunity and making an offer. The experience you gain in looking at properties, the insights you get from tracking local values, and the results you achieve from your earlier investments will inform your current thinking and decisions. You'll be able to sort out the prospects from the suspects much more quickly. And even more precisely, let your lead generation network know what you're looking for.
Issue number one, stick or switch.
Once you've begun to acquire good basic residential real estate investments, don't let your need for greed, speed, or novelty take you off track. Don't cash out too quickly, even if you'd like to have the money right now. Don't begin to take risks because someone says you can get rich faster with other kinds of investments. Don't change your criteria simply because you're bored with looking at the same kinds of opportunities and deals again and again. Repetition is the mother of mastery and of skill. When you connect to the results you are achieving with the activities you are repeating, you'll get excited about the activities. The power is in the repetition. Here's the basic wisdom. Pick a niche to get rich. Learn the niche, master the niche, and eventually own the niche. Stick to it and maximize your financial growth from it. Your criteria will define your niche. It may be geographic or a type of property. It usually will be focused on a price range and the condition of the property. It may also involve a type of financing or a particular clientele of renters. Once you have that niche and you're getting good results, stick with it and ride it for all it's worth. There may come a time when your niche is maxed out and there are no more good deals in it, or you may find that economic conditions or governmental regulations have put a hold on growth in that niche. Then you'll be faced with a dilemma I call the dilemma of stick or switch. Do I stick with my criteria and switch my market, or do I stick with my market and switch my criteria? Think about this carefully. Don't do it as a knee-jerk reflex. Be sure the switch is necessary, and think about what you would prefer to master, a new market or a new set of criteria. In either case, you'll need to put in the time and do the work to master your new niche. Our millionaires told us that when they changed strategies, they did it carefully and purposefully. They took enough time to gain confidence in the new niche before ramping up their acquisitions. In a sense, they kept a beginner's mind, willing to learn before taking action. For them, the phrase persistent effort and patient money is a lifelong working principle.
Issue number two, become an expert.
How does an investor become an expert in his or her niche? Once you've picked a specific geographic area, a type of property, and a set of economic standards, you focus on the details and issues of that real estate investment profile. You must uncover all the information sources you can, find out who else is working that area, and get to know them. Then set up your lead generation program. There are three ways to master your niche. The first is study and observation. The second is experience and doing. And the third is asking and listening.
Study and observation.
You already know that you must be able to determine market values and rental values accurately. In your target area, you'll track these two factors continuously and be able to apply them to any particular property. But you'll also want to follow the local trends that affect those values. You'll keep track of business growth, new construction, zoning changes, and highway construction, plus recreational development and any other factors that might indicate increased population, employment, and housing demand. Millionaire real estate investors are students and observers. That is how they become confident about predicting average time on the market for property sales, future home sale prices, vacancy rates, and the likelihood of continued price and rent appreciation. When they factor appreciation into their acquisition evaluations, they aren't guessing or being hopeful. They know because they take the time and make the effort to become experts in that type of property, in that price range, in that kind of condition, and in that location. They know their criteria in great detail, and they do enough research to know whether a property is worth pursuing or a deal worth doing. Many of them even keep their own databases of real estate activities and listings. They know what they need to know, so they notice and take note. They search out reports and review the facts. You will too.
Experience and doing.
You can't play the game from the sidelines, and you certainly can't do it from the stands. So as much as you learned from observing and tracking trends, your real estate investment education has really just begun. To be a true expert, you have to get in the game, mix it up, get dirty, take your lumps, and learn from your miscues. Millionaire real estate investors know what they know because they know how it works in the real world, the multivariable interactive world of action and reaction, cause and effect. In the end, real wisdom comes from taking action and learning from what happens. I've come to see learning as having four stages: understanding, knowledge, wisdom, and power. Understanding means you are aware of something. You get it mentally. Knowledge means you have studied it and see how you could do it. Wisdom means you have experienced it and know how it works. Power means it has become a part of you and you do it habitually. You are now unconsciously competent. There is no difference between you and what you know. It's reflexive. You act on it virtually without thinking about it. You make it look simple. The true masters of anything are like this. Their knowledge and wisdom are deep. However, this level of learning has a price. It comes from doing. While the masters remain students of the game, they are first and foremost players of the game. That is the place I want to point you toward, becoming a master of the real estate investment game. Be willing to get in the arena and learn by doing. Mistakes are okay. In fact, they're great teachers. Don't fear them. Embrace them. Do this not because mistakes are your goal, but because they are inevitable in achieving any goal. Take action and learn to enjoy the challenges and lessons of the game.
Asking and listening.
It's not just the formal or institutional sources of information that matter. It's the locals at the cafe and the retirees shooting the breeze on the porch. There's a wealth of useful local information that comes from the spittin' and whittlin' and the neighborhood gossip. Don't overlook it, underestimate it, or prejudge it. You want access to that kind of unpublished insider information. It can give you an advantage in finding hidden opportunities, avoiding unknown dangers, and negotiating from strength. What these people know can make you wealthy. Locals know who may need to sell and why, for reasons like death, divorce, lost jobs, family changes, and so on. They know the history of a property in its neighborhood, any fires, floods, repairs, crime, and such. They may know people who would like to rent the property, help you maintain it, and even keep an eye on it for you. Remember that all real estate is local. It's tied to the community and what's happening in the community. The principles for real estate investing may be universal, but the conditions are always local. You must know your niche intellectually, experientially, and socially. Your knowledge, your experience, and your relationships are what can make you a financially wealthy expert.
Issue number 3. Think in units.
There is one trend that is so pervasive among our millionaire real estate investors that it seems to be a truth. We've come to call it the think in units truth. It's about how many units you own, and it's really a double think: rental units and management units. To understand this truth graphically, refer to Figure 97 on the bonus CD. As the number of dollars invested in real estate increases, notice the increase in the dollar signs as you look down the left-hand column. So does the number of rental units. Keep in mind, each of the circles represents a rental unit. However, our research shows that there is, at the same time, a decrease in the number of management units. Those are represented by the shaded rectangles. In other words, as you invest in more and more real estate, you begin to think in units, the number of management units that contain your rental units. If all you owned were single-family houses, you would have one management unit for each rental unit. But when you acquire a duplex, you now have two rental units in one management unit. In a fourplex, you have four rentals in one management unit, and in an apartment building, there can be many rentals within just one management unit. This trend toward multi-unit properties makes sense for at least two reasons: simplicity of management and limitation of losses. Since each building will require both property management and leasing services, it's usually easier and more efficient to have fewer of them. Handling one large apartment building with 100 rental units is easier than managing and leasing 100 separate single-family houses. Thus, consolidating management costs can increase the profitability or the net cash flow of the investment. The second reason for doing this is that it can limit potential losses on individual management units. If you have one vacant apartment in a 20-unit building, you're still receiving 95% of your rental income from that property. You're unlikely to go into default on your debt service, and you'll still probably have positive cash flow. When your single-family rental house is vacant, you don't have any income from that property, and that presents a big problem for that management unit. If you own 20 single-family homes, your total income loss is just the same 5% as it is in the 20-unit building. But you may incur more hassle and paperwork as you move cash flow from other properties to protect your vacant home, especially if you've got your home separated into different legal entities. That brings up another important factor that leads investors to think in units. Each management unit also entails entity protection, insurance policies, a tax return, and probably a separate property management person. The consolidation of your units under one roof, so to speak, saves on all these costs. And when you must be involved, you will probably save a lot of driving time. This is certainly a case where you can take complexity out of the game. Multi-unit properties can also increase your ratio of rents to value. This means that you are receiving more monthly income for each dollar's worth of market value of the property. You can see this easily with a duplex, triplex, or fourplex. In most areas, based on our research, you will be able to get between 0.7% and 1% of the property's value as a monthly rent. In our acquisition model, we recommended using 0.8%. As you'll recall, this means that if the property has a market value of $100,000, you can expect to rent it for $800 per month. Typically, you will find that rental income from a duplex is greater. It won't be double, but it is usually 25 to 50% more. As a result, if the $100,000 property is a duplex, you may have two units that each rent for $600, which gets you a total of $1,200 per month, or 1.2%. The downside of large multifamily buildings is that they may not get the same level of appreciation in value that is possible for single-family properties. Also, there's a more limited market for those who will or can buy them. If you sell, it will be to other investors, and they'll base their offers strictly on your cash flow numbers. No emotional buyers here. Therefore, most of our millionaire real estate investors told us they kept some single-family properties in their portfolios. They liked the flexibility, the ability to sell or refinance one or two for immediate cash. plus the increased appreciation if there was ongoing buyer demand in the market.
Terms. Hold them dear.
As you become a master of terms on your path to own a million and beyond, you will learn more and more about four things. The first is controlling the property before you make the deal. The second, using creative financing to finance the deal. Third, maximizing your net operating income to get more cash flow out of the deal. Last, knowing your options for property disposition to get maximum cash out of the deal. Controlling the deal, getting in for less, generating greater cash flow, and maximizing cash you get when you sell will become your so-called terms of endearment. Remember, while your criteria drive your lead generation and help you identify an investment opportunity, it is the terms that make a deal worth doing. Your long-term success as a real estate investor will come down to your ability to master and get the right terms, so always hold them dear. If you look at Figure 98 on the bonus CD, you will see there are really three kinds of terms. One is acquisition, the second is operating, and the third is disposition. Each of them can affect the overall financial performance of your investments. Making the terms work for your money is how you get your money to work for you. I recommend that you master the buy and hold terms worksheet. Each area of the worksheet represents a place where you can improve the way your money works for you. If you use it as a guide, you'll learn to control it, buy it right, operate it right, and when it's time, sell it right. Buying, operating, and selling is a dynamic process. What you do at one point in the process will affect many other parts of your investment picture. Successful investors understand the way all the parts affect each other and the results that are achieved. If you can understand this, you will make more informed decisions and more positive choices along your path to becoming a millionaire. The first step in getting clarity is to have a standard model to use for comparison. Then, as you make changes from that standard model, you can see what the impact is on your cash flow, your return on investment, and see how great that impact is. Let's now look at how terms can affect your cash flow and ROI by isolating the variables. If you check out Figure 99 on the bonus CD, you will see what our standard model looks like. It reflects a $100,000 current market value, 20% discounted purchase price, 20% down payment, and 5% annual appreciation in market value, plus a 5% annual appreciation in rents, initial monthly rents at 0.8% of market value, expenses and vacancy at 40% of rental income, as well as a 30-year loan at 7.43%. We'll compare the annual cash flow and the annual return on investment we achieve in year 10. For our standard model, we would achieve at year 10 an annual cash flow of $3,602 and a total return on investment for that year of 78.3%, or $12,526 divided by $16,000. This return on investment, or ROI, is a total of annual appreciation plus annual principal paydown plus annual net cash flow divided by the initial down payment. This is not the only way to calculate return, as we will discuss later, but it provides a standard for comparison. What we see from the standard model chart is that if we don't buy with a discount, both our cash flow and our return will go down. Lower market value appreciation doesn't really affect cash flow, but seriously reduces ROI by 29%. Higher market value appreciation doesn't change the projected cash flow, but increases ROI by 41.4%. Lower rent appreciation reduces cash flow and ROI. Higher rent appreciation is very positive for anticipated cash flow and also increases ROI. Holding expenses to 30% causes a dramatic increase in cash flow, $1,490 over the standard model. Getting rents up from 0.8% to 1% of property value increases cash flow by a whopping $2,234 annually. Doing this also increases ROI. Finally, a 0.5% increase or decrease in loan interest rates doesn't seriously affect either cash flow or ROI. Even a full 1% reduction in the interest rate increases ROI only by 5%. Nowhere near as dramatic an impact as having higher market appreciation or getting a higher rental rate. As you acquire and operate your income properties, you now know where to focus your efforts to improve your terms, depending on whether your current goals concern maximizing the cash flow from your properties or the ROI of your investments. Let these numbers direct your focus. If you want increased cash flow, do three things. First, get higher rents for a 62% increase over the standard model. Second, reduce expenses for a 41% increase over the standard model. Last, invest in areas where rents are appreciating to get a 37% increase over the standard model. If your goal is to maximize ROI, do the following three things. Number one, invest in areas where values are appreciating for a 53% increase over the standard model. Number two, get higher rents for an 18% increase over the standard model. Number three, reduce expenses for a 12% increase over the standard model. Investing in areas with strong rent or value appreciation is really about criteria. As Figure 100 on the bonus CD demonstrates, the two areas impacted by terms that have a strong impact on both cash flow and ROI are higher rents and reduced expenses. Millionaire real estate investors at the Own a Million stage understand the impact of their acquisition, operation, and disposition terms can have on their cash flow and ROI. They're continually exploring new creative ways to impact the profitability of their investments through terms. So let's explore in detail the four principal ways millionaire investors do this. First, they control the property and negotiate everything. Next, they take full advantage of creative financing. Third, they max their NOI. Fourth, they know their options for disposition.
Issue number four. Control the property and negotiate everything.
In real estate, as in almost everything in life, the advantage goes to the one in control. Putting a property under contract, even before all the details are worked out, gets you into the driver's seat, and that's where you need to be. When you find an opportunity that looks good, always think about quickly getting it under contract. The contract gives you control, and will always have clauses that allow you to exit the deal if your due diligence in the form of inspections, conveyances, zoning research, and so on, shows that you need to get out. In some cases, you might need to invest in an option or a non-refundable deposit, but this may be a small consideration in return for the advantage of controlling the sale. If you determine that you do not want the property, you can still sell and assign your contract to another investor and be paid for it. These and other escape clauses are listed in Figure 101 of the bonus CD. Here is some advice from our millionaire real estate investors. Negotiate everything and anything. You do this when you make your initial offer and later with counteroffers. Of course, you'll be sure to get your price with your discount, but in many ways, that is only the beginning. Look at the property and see what could be conveyed with the sale. Valuable conveyances might include the washer and dryer, the window coverings, the gas grill, or some of the furniture. When appropriate, ask for needed repairs or for the seller to cover part or all of your closing costs. You never know what you can get until you ask. Think outside the box. In fact, think outside the house. I've seen it all in the thousands of transactions that have come across my desk as a broker. From the buyer who said he would do the deal if the seller would throw in all the lawn equipment, to another who said she'd buy at the seller's price if it included the classic Mercedes in the garage. In both cases, the sellers said yes. But it's not just about personal property and conveyances. It can also be about the financial numbers. When my co-author Dave bought a property 6 years ago, he offered to pay the sellers the full asking price if they would contribute $7,000 toward his closing costs. They said yes without making a counteroffer. He knew that they had been out of the house for several months and had already had one purchase contract fall through. Rather than lowball his offer on a house he really wanted, he guessed that a full price offer with his financing pre-approved and in writing would be very attractive to them. The contribution to his closing costs would seem incidental to getting it sold and closed quickly. He was right, but he wouldn't have known it if he hadn't asked. The key is to find out what is important to the sellers, offer them what they want, and then ask for what you want. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Find out what will. Great negotiators are great investigators. They know that every transaction needs to be a win-win. You need to make it a win for you for sure, but also look for the best way to make it a win for the other party. Always be curious and always ask. Find out what's important to the seller and know what's important to you. Negotiate any and everything.
Issue number 5. Finance creatively.
As you do more investing, you'll want to master creative financing. Your ability to construct creative financial terms might get you into deals that you might not otherwise be able to do. In some markets, as I experienced in the late 1970s and again in the late 1980s, creative financing may be the only way to get transactions done. There comes a time when conventional and institutional financing can be overly expensive or not available. This situation may be caused by general economic conditions or your personal financial position. Once you have a number of properties, institutional lenders may place limits on what they will lend you as an investor. You may have to wait until you have the equity in or positive cash flow from your properties that they require in order to lend you more. Finally, sometimes sellers have specific situations that may require or allow creative financing. This presents a unique opportunity to construct a creative transaction that meets the seller's goals and still works for you. Creative financing is the way around these binds. It can also help you get into properties with less of your own money used as a down payment and lower your monthly debt service. This means you'll want to master a number of creative financing concepts like owner financing, where the seller carries the mortgage for you, or assumptions, where you take the responsibility for the seller's mortgage when this is allowed by the seller's mortgage lender. Another concept is called a wrap, where the owner offers you a new loan while keeping and paying down their original loan. The new loan wraps the original. Then there are lease options, leasing the property from the seller until you have the equity or cash to buy it, or private seconds, where you obtain a second loan to cover your down payment on a primary mortgage loan. One more creative financing option is a syndication, where you involve other investors and partners in your acquisitions. Millionaire investors use all the tools in their toolbox to get the deal done. The chart displayed in Figure 103 on the bonus CD illustrates how the numbers might work in a scenario where the investor attempts to take ownership of a $100,000 property through creative financing. You'll note the conventional financing positioned in Column 1 is included as a point of reference for these creative variations. In all four of the ownership scenarios shown in Columns 1 through 4, it's important you understand that a private second loan can come also from the seller. Just know that secondary liens in general carry less favorable terms for the buyer. That's because it's about collateral. First liens are generally secured against the property, and they are first in line if the deal goes sour and the property must be liquidated to pay back the loan. Secondary lenders account for this in the terms they offer. Also, any of these scenarios can be syndicated if you are unable or unwilling to provide cash or collateral to make these deals happen. In each case, you would negotiate the deal and bring in other partners and investors. Your ability to borrow the money will go through three stages: credit, equity, and cash flow. At first, lenders will look to your creditworthiness as reflected in your credit score. This means having little or no credit card debt, paying your bills on time, and having a history of paying back loans in a timely, responsible way will contribute to a strong credit rating. It also matters that you have some savings available for down payments. Although you may be able to purchase your own residence with little or no money down, when it comes to conventional financing for buy and hold investment real estate, you'll usually need to put your own money into it. The lenders will expect it, and it gives you instant equity. At some point, you will need credibility as well as a credit rating. The lender will need to see that you have made wise investments. The first measure of this will be your equity position in the properties you own. Sometimes you can access this money by getting a home equity loan and using it to make your down payment. In fact, you may become your own lender of choice. The interest rate is right, the approvals are easy, and you have all the control. Beyond self-financing, many of our millionaire real estate investors took advantage of private lending or established a line of credit, using the equity in one or more of their investment properties as collateral. In any case, if you have reached a lender's limit on borrowing, that lender will consider you for more only if you have a very strong, provable equity position in your current holdings. Finally, particularly for larger multifamily acquisitions, the amount of the loan will be based strictly on the cash flow of the property. An institutional lender will require a detailed analysis based on recent and verifiable financial reports of the rental income, expenses, vacancies, and net cash flow of the property. Those lenders are looking to minimize their risks, so they'll be very cautious when considering a large loan on an income property. Your track record and reputation will be as important as the specific numbers on the building. At this stage of your investing, you are likely to be the major factor in people's willingness to lend you money. Your credibility is always with you and can be one of your most valuable assets.
Issue number 6. Maximize your NOI.
The third area of terms you will need to master is maximizing your net operating income, or NOI. This is the ability to run your real estate investments at a profit. NOI is what you have left from your gross rental income after you've covered your vacancies and paid your operating expenses. This is detailed in the buy and hold terms worksheet we've already reviewed in Figure 93 on the bonus CD. Actually, from an operating point of view, there are only rental income and expenses. Vacancies simply reduce your rental income. So there are three things you can do to maximize your net operating income. You can increase gross rental income, control expenses, and minimize your vacancies. Let's take them in that order.
Increase gross rental income.
Millionaire real estate investors achieve higher rents than others. Most of the millionaires in our research group followed the 1% rule of thumb for rents, getting 1% of the property's market value as the monthly rent. For example, a $100,000 house would rent for $1,000 per month. When we looked at rents and values in a large number of markets, that rule of thumb seemed too optimistic, particularly for single-family homes. We determined that 0.8% for single-family properties was probably more realistic, and that's what we used for the examples in the Buy a Million section of the book. But that rule of thumb didn't hold up. Our millionaire investors consistently achieved higher than average rents. How did they do that? As a group, they do five specific things to maximize rents. First, they used rent escalators in their contracts so that the rent would increase year by year without question, negotiation, or notice. It would happen automatically, and the renters would know that they had pre-agreed to it, so it didn't feel arbitrary. While this preset rent increase might not keep up with the actual rental trends, it at least meant that there was some increase even when the same renters were in place for a long time. Second, they made the kinds of improvements that were attractive to local renters and made their properties stand out. What they discovered was that, within reason, people will pay more if they believe they are getting more. Cosmetic improvements and certain amenities can make your rentals uniquely better than the competition's and bring more gross income. Remember from our earlier discussion that raising rents even a few tenths of a percent can have a big positive impact on your net cash flow and returns. Third, some of our investors specialized in government-subsidized housing called Section 8 subsidies. They knew which houses in which areas would qualify for the subsidies, and that allowed them to market this advantage and achieve premium rents. Their net positive cash flow became virtually automatic. Fourth, some of those we interviewed were very good at targeting their tenants. They would work with local real estate agents or apartment locators to attract the right renter, those willing to pay a premium for the right place. They would highlight the quality, features, and amenities of their units. In a sense, they would work to lead generate their tenants in the same way they lead generated their investment opportunities. They would get testimonials from current renters and would ask those good renters for additional rental leads. In some cases, they would target people with short-term needs, for instance, those new to the area or those waiting for a custom home to be built, then give them flexibility in the length of the lease in order to maximize the rental income. The fifth method for increasing revenue was to gain other income from the tenants. Coin-operated laundry and fees for pets, storage, parking, and lawn care could all be additional sources of income. It was highly recommended to have the tenants take care of all their own utilities, with direct personal responsibility for payment to the utility providers.
Control expenses.
Controlling operating expenses is a great way to increase your NOI, and it's only a matter of record-keeping and attention to details. Many investors we interviewed set up well-organized systems of bookkeeping and cost accounting. Several set up their own property management businesses. Whether you do it yourself or have a management service do it for you, it's important to watch your expense trends and question anything that seems out of line. Rob Harrington from Boston says he compares his cost sheets from month to month, notes the trends, and looks for unusual changes. Over the years, he has discovered water leaks and faulty electrical units that, if neglected for a long enough period of time, could have cost him hundreds and even thousands of dollars. If you have the right record-keeping system in place and set aside a regular time slot each month to do your review, he says this will not take very much time and you'll be paid well for doing it. Expenses saved are profits earned. Another consideration in maximizing your NOI by controlling expenses has to do with repairs and improvements. We've looked at this in the buy and sell scenario, and we've illustrated the concept of maximum return in Figure 88 of the bonus CD. The most astute investors know that repairs and improvements are not just an issue for buy and sell or fix and flip. They're a major part of the NOI equation. When it comes to improvements, there are three moments of truth. The first arrives after you buy, but before you rent. The second moment of truth occurs while you own and operate. The third and final moment comes before you sell. Repairs and improvements involve making cost-benefit calculations. The right improvements may allow you to get higher rents and a better price when you sell. The wrong improvements may accomplish neither. The right improvements may represent a great use of your cash flow. The wrong ones may not. Improvements are a tax-deductible expense, and the right ones can add value to your property and increase your equity. The wrong ones are just deductions. There are four kinds of improvements. The first are necessary and add value, things like a new roof or flooring. The second are unnecessary but add value. Landscaping and cosmetic enhancements are examples of this type of improvement. The third type of improvement, like plumbing repair, rewiring to code, or foundation work, are necessary, but they don't add value. The fourth and last type of improvement is unnecessary and doesn't add value. Expensive fixtures and amenities fall into this category. This last category is a judgment call and is essentially a matter of whether the costs of the improvements will bring about an equivalent increase in market or rental value. Your support and service network specialists will be able to consult with you on this, so seek them out and listen hard to their advice. The wisest landlords know that repairs and improvements are an NOI financial gain. They know that it's not always wise to minimize operating costs at the expense of income and equity gains. They understand these operating costs are, in fact, another form of investing.
Minimize vacancies.
Reducing vacancies and the time it takes to re-rent the property are also important ways to improve net operating income. The key is to anticipate vacancies and have a game plan to market the properties to new tenants. Get ahead of your vacancies, not behind them. When a unit goes vacant, be ready to rehab, clean, prep, and market it quickly. Keep in mind, the more units you own, the more cost-effective it becomes to have staff or service providers perform this service for you. While it may seem obvious that keeping your tenants for a long time reduces vacancies and is a good thing, Rob Harrington says that many landlords are so eager to raise rents that they may alienate good tenants. He makes a good point. that it may take a very long time, even at a higher rent, to make up for the lost income from a vacancy.
Issue number 7. Know your options for property disposition.
Selling a property right is just as important as buying it right, and this goes beyond getting the highest price. Beyond staging the home for sale and marketing for buyers, what do millionaire real estate investors do that maximizes their returns from selling? The first thing they do is determine why they are selling. If it's to get immediate cash, then they are like any motivated seller. What they now get to decide is which property to sell and why. For example, they may have to choose between a property that is underperforming as an investment or one that can command an unusually good price in the current market. Making this decision simply takes some thoughtful analysis that includes value and rent forecasting. Now, before you decide to actually sell a property, you should always review your options for property disposition, which are lease option out, refinance, tax-deferred 1031 exchange, or sell. There are other ways to get cash out of a property than selling it. It may meet all your needs to simply refinance the property and pull some of your equity out in the form of cash. Millionaire real estate investor Kathy Manchester took advantage of her strong equity position in a high-end vacation rental to use it as a $250,000 equity line of credit. She taps into this amazing cash resource regularly for short-term buy-improve-and-sell investments and then quickly puts the money back into her home. If you are looking for a way to maximize your price, you can use the lease option out strategy by finding a renter who wants to buy but can't qualify for traditional lending. In the lease option contract, you can offer to apply some of the rent toward the purchase, agree on a higher-than-market rental rate, and negotiate the terms of the future sale at a precise point in time. With this approach, you should have a higher NOI and usually a higher sale price. If the renter does not exercise the purchase option when the contract expires, you can do it again with the next renter. In a lease option or any sale, you can opt to be the lender. Many non-qualifying buyers will pay a premium in both price and interest rate because you are their last or only source of financing. If they default, you get to do it again, probably at a higher price.